Good morning once again.
Good morning.
And if you weren't here for Sunday school, I'm Brother Nick Perino. My wife Rhea is here with me. And we bring a loving greetings from the San Diego Ecclesia, which many know down there. This morning, when we had Sunday school, we talked about how great God is. And I started off with some of the verses. One of the things I did quote from was Psalms 8:1. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set the glory above the heavens. And when I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon, the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that thou visitest him? The more we look, the more man looks into space, we find that the earth is just a speck, and we ourselves are a speck also. So if you wanted to say it, we're a speck on a speck in the universe. That's what our position is. But even so, our Heavenly Father loves us. He looks at us as a speck and loves us and wants us to be in his kingdom. One of the things he has done, I want to read some verses first before I get into it. Romans 8:28, and he knows that all things work together for the good of them that love God, to them who are called. Are called what? According to his purpose. First John 3:1. See what manner of love the Father has given us, that we be called the children of God. We are called the children of God. For this reason the world does not know us, because it did not know him. And in verse 2 of that same chapter, beloved, now we are the children of God. It is not yet revealed what we shall be. We don't know our purpose. This is one of the things that God mysteriously, I would say, if you wanted to know a mystery, we don't know what God is grooming us for. We have all been called, and he says it has a purpose for us. And what that purpose will be revealed, I think, in the kingdom. Some brothers try to answer this. I remember one brother saying one time, he says, I think whatever field or occupation you're in is going to have something to do in the future. And I go, I've been a mechanic for 50 years. I don't want to be doing mechanic work for the next 1,000, you know. So that wasn't like, you know, something for me to look forward to. But the thing is that we've been called. And we answer this call. You know, you can look at, we took this calling and we turned our lives to that calling and we followed it. And it reminds me of Moses in the burning bush. You know, Moses had a choice. He saw this bush burning and he could have just said, bush is burning. Sometimes I wonder, how long was this bush burning before it really caught his attention? Maybe it would, you know, it wasn't, the Bible makes it seem like he saw a burning bush and said, oh, I'm going to go investigate. It might have been burning for days, I don't know, hours or days or whatever, that finally it like dawned on him that there's something different there, I have to go look. And he was called, this was how he was called. This is when he was given what he had to do. Not that he eagerly wanted to do it when you know the story, but this is how he was called. And we read of Samuel, and Samuel was literally called. He heard a voice calling his name. But we are blessed that we were called, and how many of us know stories of brethren that were called in different ways? They came into the truth. They heard it, and they came in. And I'm going to share a story of my parents who were, if you know my father, I'm the last one born in the family, and I was like the mistake, so I was like the very end of the family. So my parents were, you know, a lot older, and but my father was, I guess, was in his 30s. They were Italian, and so they were of Catholic background. But for some reason, my father just never just got that. He was looking. And not in his early part of life, he was in his 30s, I guess, when he started looking. If you knew his life, you would think, this guy would never go look for the truth because he wasn't that type of character. But he did go look, and he said, went to a Lutheran church for a while, and then he went to a Presbyterian church, and then he wasn't really an educated guy. His comment was, same beliefs as the Catholics, but no pope and priest. That was his terminology. And along his path to life, he did run into a brother, an Italian brother, and said to him, if you really want to know it, come with us to this class. And that's how he got involved. And my mother was a diehard Catholic. You know, when she was young, she said she wanted to be a nun. This is how diehard she was. And she just kept saying to him, I don't want you to go there anymore. I think you should come back to the church. You know, this. And you got to remember, they were in an ethnic community. They're all Italians that were Catholic. And not only that, the whole family was Catholic. So you changing what you believe was a big thing. But he got involved with the group of Italians there, and he came to believe the truth. He got baptized, and my mother kept pushing him, and he said, you know, before I leave this, I'll leave you. He goes, this is how strong he felt about it. And then he would one of his comments would be to her, you know, Christ is going to return, and I'm going to be taken, and you're going to be left here with the kids. And that got into her head, because he would always tell her that. And what had happened was, they were poor. They lived in a cold water flat. I don't know if you know what a cold water flat was. It's an apartment that you had to create your own heat for and so forth. And the one thing about it is you didn't have your own restroom. It was down the hall, and you shared that restroom with everybody on that floor that lived in that apartment house. And one night my mother woke up, and my father wasn't in the bed. And she looked for him, and he wasn't in the apartment. She's not thinking that he's down at the restroom. She goes, Christ came and took him. That was her thought. She got frightened, and so she started looking into it, and eventually she got baptized. But that's what changed her mind. But it, you know, I think all of us have stories about, you know, how our people came into the truth, how they ran into this. But what one question you would ask yourself, and I think all of it hit us as we were investigating about the truth, and is, I know the question that hit me was, what is life about? What's this all about? Why am I here? What's going on? Am I here and maybe be blessed to live 80, 90 years and have good health and that's it? And as a youngster, I kept thinking this and going, if that's the purpose then, that I'm going to be here 80, 90 years and I'm going to die, then my dog's better than me, because he's going to live 10 or 12 years and he don't know he's going to die. He's just not going to wake up one day. And so there has to be a reason for me to have these thoughts. And so what happens then? You come into the truth, you get baptized, and you come here to meeting. And you come here to meeting for what? You come here to get energized, really. Otherwise, stay home. You could read your Bible home. You could break bread home. You could do all these things home. But when you come here, there's a purpose of coming here. It's to share the fellowship with one another, and it's also to energize ourselves for the week that's coming up, to get us going. Now, when I look at our lives today, I you know, when I was in sports, I could see patterns in our lives today that taught me things in sports. I was on a track team. I used to love running. That was like one of my passions. And on this track team, you had to make the team, first of all. I think today, the kids, I don't know if they have to make the teams anymore. I hear that now you want to be on a team, you're automatically on the team. It wasn't like that when I grew up. If you weren't good enough, you weren't on the team. And there was a young fellow on this team that his forte was supposedly in, I can't remember exactly what he did, but it was in the javelin or discus throwing or one of those things. And I said, look, why is this kid on this team? Because he wasn't really that good. I mean, you know. And then one day it really hit me, and actually didn't hit me then, it hit me years later when I thought about it. We were invited to this invitational track meet, and it happened to be a parochial school track meet, and we were in a public school, and we're the only ones invited because they heard our team was pretty good, so they invited us to it. And we all piled on the bus, and this kid was the one that would get everyone going. He would get us chanting and singing. And by the time we would get to the event, he had that bus was charged. All the kids that came off that bus, we were ready for our event. And years later, I thought about it. He was the motivator. And that's why the coach kept him. He got the whole team going. And so we had the event that day. I don't even recall what I did. But the team won point-wise. We took their trophy, and they never invited us again. But it's other patterns that I learned from that. The patterns I learned was each of us had something that we had to bring to the team. I had to learn things. You know, the Bible speaks of this. We're given talents. And he says, remember the talents? It says, we're giving the talents to you. And you know, when I talk to sometimes the brothers and sisters, and they go, I really don't know what my talent is or what I'm supposed to be doing, or I don't have a talent. And I think to myself, okay, you don't have a talent? All right, then explain to me. It says in there, one was given five talents. Now, they were speaking monetarily, but I'm speaking the talents in your physical ability to do things. One was given three talents. One was given one talent. And I said, I don't remember reading that. Somebody was given no talents. So if you deduce that back, you say, I've been chosen, and I've been given at least one talent. Now, how do I find out what my talent is? What is my contribution to God and to the meeting and to all our brothers and sisters? I have to have some kind of contribution. How do I find out? Well, when I was on the track team, I liked to run a 100-yard dash. You know what? It wasn't my talent. Even though I liked to run it, I wasn't good at it. Guys would beat me out of the blocks. I would lose that race. So, okay. So I moved it up. I went to the 200 meter. I loved that too. That was great. I'd go. It was a great race for me. Not good enough. Another talent. I didn't want to run distance. I hated to run. You talk this. I didn't like to run distance. It had to be a So the last dash that was left was a 400 meter. Let me tell you, that 400 meter was a killer. I mean, you had to plan. You had a plan in your mind when you ran that race. You had to. I ran it a certain way. I had to run. I would run real hard for the first 110 yards, and then I would maintain it, and then at 300 yards I would open up again, and by 400 yards, I mean, there's 40 yards to go, it would hit me. My mind was saying, go faster, and a body saying, that's all there is, pal. If anyone's going to pass you, they're going to pass you, because you can't go any further. And it's sort of like us in the meeting. You know, we get baptized, we come out, and we're like gung-ho about everything. We want to get involved and do these things, and then we kind of slow down a little bit. We get, you know, and then we become mediocre, and we're cruising along, and we just try to, and if we're fortunate, we stay at this plateau. You know, sometimes you fall down, we get back in, and there's all kinds of things that hit, adversities that hit us. But I think to myself, at the end, what should we be doing? This is where you're supposed to open up and do the best you can. Because one of the feelings after running that race, after I crossed that line, not only was I totally spent all my energy to do it, I knew I gave every ounce that I had. There wasn't anything that I couldn't do anymore. And that was it. And that's how I feel we should be in the truth. And so you look at motivators in the Bible. Now we spoke of Moses. And I think about when he was backed up, you know, they're backed up now to the Red Sea. And he has all these people clamoring and screaming when they see this Egyptian army. You got to put yourself in their shoes. They were raised by the Egyptians and were beaten, they were murdered, and were treated harshly. And now they see the Egyptian army there coming to murder them. What would you think? They were going crazy. They were going berserk. But what do we see from Moses at that time? We see Moses say in Exodus 14:13, and Moses said unto the people, fear not. Stand still. Because apparently they were probably running around like crazy, not knowing where to go. And see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you this day. For the Egyptians whom you see, you will never see them again. And he says, the Lord shall fight this battle for you and hold your peace. That was the motivator. Naturally, the Red Sea opened with God's power, and the people could see that God was with them. I think of another great motivator, David. You know, when we think of David, you know, actually when you think about Samuel going to his house, Jesse's house, and going, let me see your sons, and he parades his sons before him, and he goes, and even Samuel said, when he saw his first son, he goes, surely this must be the one. No, not all the way down to, you know, the story gets to David, and it says, David's the one. And you'd kind of leave it like that. Well, God knows who it is. David's talent, what was his talent? He was a shepherd, a young lad with a shepherd. God was working with him in those fields. His talent was to protect those sheep. He learned something out there. He defended those sheep from a bear and a lion. If I had a high-powered rifle, I would still be fearful today of facing a bear or a lion. Now, you got to look at you think of the sling he had and the stone he had. You know, and people have this impression that this stone was maybe about this big, a small stone. They found, archaeologists have found these stones. Those stones are more like a baseball size, okay? And this is a stone. You ever see a Major League Baseball player get hit by a 100-mile-an-hour pitch? And it'll drop him, okay? How fast is that sling throwing it out? I bet it's over 100 miles an hour. So if you're going to stop a bear or a lion, it had to be a pretty potent weapon. And that's what he was groomed for, and that's what he did. And he motivated that army. But, you know, the thought that you don't think about, remember when he got there and his brothers are going, what are you doing here? Go home. You just want to see what's going on. Go home and take care of those sheep. My question is, where was his brother? When he saw David walking out there, his kid brother's walking out to meet this Goliath, why didn't his brother stick up for him? Why didn't he say, hey, I ain't going to let this giant kill my brother? He didn't. It showed me a lack of faith, a lack of love for God because of the challenge, and a lack of love for his brother. And that's why when Samuel went there, he wasn't chosen. What did David say? The giant, he says, you come here with a shield and a sword? I come with you in the name of God. It showed you where his heart was. He had no fear that way. So he motivated the people. I think of Jesus Christ, our Savior, and his motivations. You know, one of the stories that I like to read is in John 11 about raising of Lazarus. You know, you could teach the truth right out of what Martha says about Lazarus, maybe about Jesus when he asks her about your brother will live. She goes, I know he will. Her confession is a confession of truth. And he purposely set this up to do it. He made sure, even to this day, you would not be questioning that maybe the guy wasn't really dead. Maybe the guy thought, they thought he was dead. You know, they have this thing where they can't really check if the person doesn't have a pulse. Now, the sisters had to put these words in. Now, words are not put in there to fill up the story. I always say this. She says, don't go there. He's dead 4 days. He already stinks. The smell of death is all over him. Why did they put that in? To show he is dead. There is no way that you're going to say this guy's, he's gone. And yet he showed who he was. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. And if you believe in me, and he raised them to show the power that God has given him to do these things. Not only is his life motivated to us, I like reading that. It used to be an ad on TV. They used to play it around Christmas time. Do you remember that? They had One Solitary Life. I don't know if you remember that. I have it here, and this is how it goes. He was born in an obscured village, the son of a peasant woman. He grew up in another village where he worked as a carpenter shop until he was 30. Then for 3 years, he became a wandering preacher. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never had a family or owned a house. He didn't go to college. He never visited a big city. He never traveled 200 miles from the place where he was born. He did none of those things one associates with greatness. He had no credentials but himself. You know, think about it. If you went around with no credentials today, you know, who are you? How do you prove yourself who you are? You can't, we'd have to investigate you. We don't know who you are. You can tell me anything. He didn't have any. He was 33 when the tide of public opinion turned against him. His friends ran away. He was turned over to the enemies and his enemies, and through a mockery of a trial, he was executed by the state. And while he was dying, his executioners gambled for his clothing, the only property he had on earth. And when he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave to the pity of a friend. That would be a summation of his life on the natural view. 20 centuries have come and gone. Today he is a central figure of the human race and the leader of mankind's progress. All the armies that ever marched, all the navies that ever sailed, all the parliaments that ever sat, all the kings that ever reigned, put together, have not affected the life of man on this earth as much as this one solitary life. And it's true. We're here today because of him. He has motivated us. So it brings up something for us as brethren. The job of, you know, I find sometimes that the job of exhorting brother is to, what is he supposed to do? What is his duty? I mean, it's not the most important job of the ecclesia. I mean, I think visiting the brethren is more important, but the job of an exhorter is to uplift. What does it mean? It means to incite, encourage, motivate, and that is his whole job on Sunday morning. I'm not up here to give you a Bible lesson. That was earlier this morning. The job of the exhorter is now to get you up and face this earth that world we live in today. 1 Thessalonians, be at peace among yourselves. We exhort you, brethren, admonish the disorderly, encourage the faint-hearted, support the weak, be long-suffering towards all. You know, exhortation is not just from this podium. This is just once a week. Exhortation is from you, how you live, how your children see you live, how your friends see you live. That is an exhortation. I have a story for you again. I always have a good story. If you know me, there's always a story. I told one of my neighbors this. I said, if you're around me long enough, you'll hear a lot of stories. I go, I've been living around pretty long, so I have a lot of stories to tell you. And here's my story. I have an automobile shop. And then Friday, when I'm not open on weekends, just one week in a month, I take care of a few people. But when Friday hits, I'm like done. I'm finished. I've had cars up to here, customers up to here. It's like, I close that door on Friday, I'm ready to go home. The best exhortation I ever got that affected me to do something was four words, and it was said to me twice, and it was going to occur at this moment in my life. What had happened was, as I leave the shop, I usually put on my earpiece and I'm calling my wife at home and I'm asking her if she wants me to bring home something to eat or whatever. And as I'm on the phone with her, I go, oh no, out of the corner of my eye, I see this young fellow, which I knew, running up the street, waving his arms at me. And he's down there a ways yet. And then she goes, what's the matter? I said, and I referred to this young fellow who she heard the stories from. And it was one of those moments that I said, I'm going to pretend I don't see him, and I'm going to gas his car out of there and just leave, you know? I don't want to deal with him. And in my earpiece, I hear, what would Jesus do? I was like, in shock. Not that I didn't hear these words before. I mean, I've heard it plenty of times at meeting, but it was thrown at me right at the moment that I had to make a decision. And still in my head, I'm working out, he's still not close enough. I could still pull this off and I can be gone. And I hear it again. And now I'm just froze. I'm sitting there. He comes running up to my window and he's going to me, my car's on fire, my car's on fire. And I look down the street, your car's not on fire. I could see smoke, but it's not on fire. And I hear her voice say, call me when it's done. Okay. He didn't know I'm talking to him and her at the same time. So I took him down there and we went to the car and he popped open the hood and it was one of his oil lines had come off from the transmission. It was going on the exhaust, but it wasn't hot enough to ignite it, but just make a lot of smoke. So now we push the car back up to the shop. He's his own mechanic, so I tell him how he's going to have to fix this. I take him home, and as he gets out of the car, he thanks me and he shakes my hand, and I realize this wasn't bad at all. In fact, I didn't feel resentful about him at all. In fact, I felt good that I did something for him. So I said, I called her up and I told her, I go, I thank you. You know, you actually made me do something that was right, and it was, so to me that was an exhortation that came at the right time. So I'm telling you, it's not someone that's up here. It's you out there speaking to your family, to ones around you, the ones you love, or even people that you might not love, and show what you're made of. And then she told me, go get a pizza. So our lives is what we make of it. There's not really an excuse for not doing things. We all have some kind of talent. You're going to have to search it out. Just like when you're on a team, you searched out what you could do at your best. And I remember this brother that used to give an exhortation. This was back east many years ago. And his line would be, you might come here and you might be just sitting in that seat and smiling at someone that needs a smile. And that's all you had to do that day. It might not have been much to you, but it might have been a lot to that one person. So knowing God, how much he loves us and how much he wants us to be into the kingdom, we're to share this joy with our brothers and sisters at all times. When they're down and out is when they really need it. And that's how we help each other. How else are we going to make it there? And then again, you're going to make it there. Don't you want them with you? I don't want to go to a place and, okay, there were the characters of the Bible. They're still strangers to me. I want to see my brethren around that I've known over the years. I want to see them. I want to share that joy with them. That would be the greatest feeling to me, to see them there. In fact, if there was a choice for them or that me being there, I would say, let them be there. But I feel God works with us all. And while maybe we think we can't be there, what's impossible to man is possible to God. I think that just keeps us humble. That's all that's doing. And so this is what we do. We come here on Sunday. It's not just a guy up here. It's you there. Your conversation that might be just what that person needed that day that gets them through the week. And I know we come here on a Sunday, and we used to call them the Sunday smiles. You know, when you go up to your brethren and you say, how you doing? Oh, I'm doing fine. Years ago, there was we had down at our ecclesia. This was Brother Tony Giordano was still alive at the time, and one of the things he used to do is go around and And he did it at other churches. He was asked to do that too. And it was go around and get people to sit down in groups and then discuss their problems. And I go, okay, we sat in a group, about 10 of us around a table, and I thought, who's going to start airing their problems at the table, you know? I was like shocked. People started opening up. And I went to Tony later, and he goes, that's the effect of it. Because we never ask people to share their problems. Figure, oh, people got their own problems. We never take that time to listen to their story and try to uplift them. That is what we're here for. This is why we're here on Sunday. It's not just about me or you. It's about all of us. And we do miss when somebody's missing. I think about it now. Like, we're driving home. I'm going to my wife. You know who wasn't there this week? You start mentioning names as you're driving home. This one wasn't, that one wasn't. And it's not because I'm wondering what happened. And if it's a few weeks, give them a call. Let's see what's going on. You know, I feel, hey, if you don't do this, And the ones I really try to watch out for, the ones that don't have anybody. You know, the ones that have family, they're the ones that are usually going, hey. But the ones that don't have anybody, they could slip away and you don't see them. And it's like, I always think, they're going to think, you know what, no one's even called me. No one cares about me. So I look out for those. If I see someone that's, you know, I'll text them, I'll do whatever it takes. Just a quick word, hey, thinking about you. Everything okay? Sometimes I'll get a response, sometimes I don't. You know, they might say something, and it's just to let them know, hey, you were missed that week. That's our job, all of us. We each have that. It's great being, you know, coming up here and exhorting you and saying things and get you going. But that's not the job. I probably get more out of it than you do, but my job is to try to get you motivated. Keep going. Because when you stop, it ends. Whatever it is, it ends. And you don't, one of the things I look at, as we get older, I see elderly brethren, they start kicking back and they go, well, let the younger... I go, where did you read that in the Bible? Does it say that you hit a certain age that you stop? Don't say that. Until you return to that ground, then you have no choice. You stop then. That's how I feel. So while you have the strength and ability to do things, uplift one another in every way you can. Because it is a journey that we're on, and we don't know the end of the road. But when we get there, we all want to be there together. Thank you for having us up here.